You're listening to Master Your Magic, a travel podcast following the wild tales and transformations of some of the greatest adventurers today. Welcome back, everyone, the Master Your Travel podcast. I am super excited to be here today. It's a bright, sunny day, California, and I'm very excited because I met an amazing human at a recent Friendsgiving party, and we just knew that we had to connect over the podcast to share all about, well, I guess there's going to be a lot of exciting travel stories to share. And let me introduce Duncan Siscon, also known as Facetia Farce, is a drag queen, clown, host, and event producer settled in Los Angeles, California. They have produced, performed in, and hosted shows at large events such as Lightning in a Bottle, Oregon County Fair, Oregon Eclipse, Electric Forest, Lost Lands, and Huluween. Duncan is passionate about bringing queer art and representation to any and all spaces. They also act as a consultant for the trans-founded and lead nonprofit Transponder, which connects the community to pro bono lawyers for legal document changes, assists in finding trans-friendly doctors and medical professionals, as well as hosting community events for trans individuals. When Duncan is not working, you can find them surfing their day away at the beach or skating on the boardwalk with their loving partner. To connect with Duncan or book Facetia, you can find them at Facetia_farce on Instagram or reach out through email to booking.facetia@gmail.com. Yee! Welcome to Master Your Travel. That was a really amazing bio, and I kind of want to dive into all things like festivals with you. I'm going to pass it over so you can introduce yourself to the tribe here. Duncan?
Yeah, of course. I'm super excited to be here, and I'm just so grateful to have met you at that Friendsgiving. I felt that connection. And so my name is Duncan Siscon. I am a drag queen, just like you just said, and I go by Facetia Farce. I'm just all about trying to bring my art and myself, which, you know, it took a long time for me to find myself. And once I did, I'm just happy to share it and hopefully give an example of what life can be once you start living within your truth rather than lying to yourself and holding yourself back. And by doing that for myself, I have opened up so many doors and so many possibilities and opportunities. Like you were just saying, working at all these amazing festivals and, you know, starting my true life.
Amazing. And they also have like the most beautiful Instagram photos. So you need to check them out because, first of all, that red hair, I was like, oh shit. It's like, or is it orange? You tell me. It's like red, red, right?
I mean, it's more of a rose gold, but, you know, really, I have so really many different hairs.
Yeah, I love it so much. And like, yeah, just beautiful. So whoever wants and feels called to definitely check out because you've got those like model vibes for sure going on.
Mm-hmm. All those model vibes, about half a couch on the hips, about 2 gallons of silicone on my chest, and about 5 pounds of makeup on my face.
Your breasts are amazing.
Why, thank you. Yeah, you know, I have a breastplate and sometimes I'll actually paint them on too. Yeah.
There's one specific photo I was looking at that I was like boob envy, honestly, like gorgeous. So.
Well, girl, get on Amazon, get yourself a new chest plate.
I don't even know what a chest plate is. What's a chest plate?
Well, it's like this silicone t-shirt with 2 silicone little boobies on it. And you just wear it, you know, powder it up a little so it doesn't stick to you too much. And yeah.
Because I have pretty small boobs. Would it just like kind of push them up or accentuate them? Or like, what would that be like?
Oh, no. It'd push them in, cover them. And then the fake boobs on the outside would just come on out.
Oh, my God. I'll get a link from you. I'm interested. I love this. Okay. So Thank you for that intro. We will dive into all things in how you unfolded. And let's just dive right into it, because I know I have this feeling about us that we're going to be able to easily talk for a very long time. So I want to just get right started. First of all, where were you born and how did you grow up? And what was your journey like for you finding yourself? And you mentioned in the beginning that for a while you didn't know who you were. And I would love to know what that was like for you as a kid or teenager, I don't know how long, and then how was that for you to find yourself?
It was horrible.
Sorry, baby, I'm sorry. I'm sure.
No, it's okay, it's okay. Let's dive into this trauma, mama. I was actually born in San Diego, California. And, you know, I was born into a really interesting family. My mom is so new agey. Like, I grew up with stories of Atlantis and Lumeria. My grandfather was on my mom's side, was this, like, you know, he's the one who taught me about sacred geometry and the power of crystals and breatharians and all of that. Very woo-woo, if you will. And my
dad... kind of cool. Like, what the fuck parent talks to their kid about that stuff? I think that's really interesting. I don't know how you felt about it, but I think that's, like, kind of interesting.
Oh, no, I loved it growing up. You know, around now, though, in my life, I'm a little more grounded, especially working music festivals and running into a lot of these people that are using these stories and this mythology and this magic to just kind of escape life. And, you know, it's just like, cool, sacred geometry is awesome. But, like, how do you connect with others and how do you connect with yourself? You know, it's just kind of like mental masturbation at some points. So I grew up with that on my mom's side. And then my dad was actually an immigrant from the Philippines. He immigrated over when he was about 5 or 7. And, you know, he has a lot of trauma in his family that I've been doing a lot of work on just kind of healing for myself. Like, I didn't know I was Filipino until I was 16 years old, because my dad always told me I was Hawaiian. And that was his survival technique, because it was easier for the little white kids at school to understand Hawaii than it was the Philippines.
Interesting.
So yeah, that's just a little insight on, like, how my dad kind of, you know, played with me and tried to set me up for success in the way that he did for himself.
And which, almost starting you off as a kid, kind of covering things up, but for your benefit, but, like, did. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The only issue is that, you know, we're in completely different times. I've completely been assimilated. Like, I know barely anything about Filipino culture, which I've been reading up on and trying to reconnect to. But at the end of the day, I am just a U.S. citizen, living my life here and, you know, living the culture that we have.
How was it for you to try to reconnect to that culture?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say how was it. I'd ask how is it, because it's this constant learning process for me.
Yeah.
You know, finding books about reconnecting to Filipino culture, which apparently is a really big thing in the United States. A lot of Filipinos out there who were born here, a lot of them are trying to find their identity with that culture once again.
I've had a deep conversation with a friend who's Filipina, and her husband is Filipino. And they, she said, just, you know, growing up, she didn't fit in, and she tried to make herself as, like, American as possible, but she never fully felt that she fit in. And so, yeah, just rediscovering herself. So definitely spot on.
Yeah, and all of those stories are so prevalent. I've been reading up on amazing books about these storylines, and especially about queer Filipinos reconnecting. And I'm very grateful that I was able to find those, because, you know.
What books would you recommend?
Oh, my gosh. I believe it's called The Groom Will Keep His Name is a really good one, about a queer Filipino who moves from Vegas to New York and kind of follows this idea of becoming a Vassar girl and trying to Americanize them and, you know, whitewash themselves, but returning to their roots and finding their love for Filipino culture. That's one that I really connected to. And other than that, I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I've been doing a lot of research into more of the like the mythology, like pre-colonial mythology of Filipino tribes. And yeah, just trying to find ways to connect. And hopefully I'm planning on getting out to the Philippines in 2023.
That was my next question. I was like, have you been there yet?
Well, hopefully soon.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's...
I did go there. It's really pretty. It's really cool. So I can't wait for you to explore that.
Thank you. Yeah. So that's my dad's side and my mom's side. So we kind of are here in this weird conjunction of this, you know, super woo-woo, open-minded, wanting your children to explore, grow, and learn and become who they are on my mom's side. And my dad's side being kind of this traumatized immigrant who wants to protect their children the way that they protected themselves, which meant hiding themselves and conforming and, you know, following the rules to the T. So I was kind of being torn back and forth between this growing up. And, you know, being queer wasn't really an option for me because that was just this big, bright light that says, hey, world, guess what? I'm different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with my father was actually the stay-at-home parent. So my mom was gone a lot. And with my dad at home, that's kind of the programming that really settled in was like, hey, actually his saying was keep your eyes and ears open and your mouth shut.
Oh,
so, yeah, that's kind of how I grew up. And that programming led me to this place within myself that was saying, hey, you are the American man, the American boy, you know, you don't cry, you're quiet, you're going to find a woman to marry and settle down with.
You got to be strong.
Mm-hmm. You can't be a belly dancer like your mom. You have to be a wrestler like your dad. And that, you know, led me to lying to myself about these feelings that I was having. You know, my whole puberty and growing up experience was just trying to convince myself that I was a straight cis man.
Right. That's hard. That's freaking hard. Yeah. What point in time were you sort of like, when did you have the realization inside that you were like, I can't, this isn't me?
Oh my God, it took so long. You know, it took me until I got to college. So at the age of 18, I decided to leave San Diego and attend UC Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Yes, the little pothead child that I was like, I'm going to go, I'm going to go become a marine biologist at UC Santa Cruz. And
okay. That's quite specific.
Oh yeah. That was also part of the programming. You know, as long as I knew exactly what I was going to be, I had my path and I wasn't going to veer, and it was set up for me and I would go and achieve those goals and become the white picket fence husband with a wife and 2.5 kids.
Wow. I'm assuming at this point, marine biology has to be somewhat connected to surfing. Was that at all?
Yeah, why? Exactly. Yeah. My father started me surfing at the age of 4 years old.
Oh, so you're good.
Yeah. Well, I hated it. Just like most things my dad forced me to do, I always hated it. Mm-hmm. Wrestling, surfing, you know, all of that stuff. He would wake me up at like 5 a.m. in the morning on the weekends to take me surfing. And he was always so rough and tough about it. And I was just like, I don't want to do this. Like, I always loved the water. I always loved swimming. But I didn't really like surfing because he'd always yell at me. He's like, you gotta paddle faster. You know, why aren't you standing up at the right time? And I'm like, isn't this supposed to be fun?
But now it's a part of life, like regular everyday life.
Exactly. And, you know, marine biology, I think for me was this way to kind of escape. And my whole idea of marine biology was one day I'll just be able to swim with dolphins and I'll just be able to play and have a great time. And then I took my first chemistry class and I was like, no, this is way too much math.
Yeah.
And You know, that was kind of that first pivotal moment of realizing that following this dream wasn't going to be as easy, and that like maybe this wasn't the path for me. And finding out that I had more interest in understanding how to connect to people, because I'd been in college, I was dealing with a lot of depression and anxiety, and a lot of it was just me trying to figure out how to authentically connect to people and why it didn't feel authentic coming from me. So that's what led me into the major of community studies at UC Santa Cruz. Cause I was like, cool, if I could do this, I can study how community works, how I fit into community, what role I can play to make life work for me.
Was that in itself, that choice, still like covering up of things? Or was it truly like, I am at this place where I need to know more about why I am the way I am?
I think the later. It was more about figuring out why I was the way I was. I was starting to kind of come out of hiding, but I was still lying to myself. I mean, lying to yourself for 20 years is not as simple as, you know, one day waking up being like, okay, I'm not going to lie to myself anymore. You know, you kind of have to go in there, and it's like pulling out Christmas lights that have been in the attic for years. You know, no one puts them away perfectly wound up. You have to go in there and untangle all of these lights and all of these cords and lay them out and then plug them in, find out which ones are lighting up and which ones aren't, and replace all of those bulbs before you can put them on a house. Oh, so yeah, it's a lot of unpacking.
Was there a specific person, circumstance, event, anything that like off the top of your head that you were like, this made me feel like I want to go down this other path. I'm ready to untangle these fucking lights.
Yeah, actually I met a mentor in Santa Cruz. I was moving out of the apartments on campus and down into a house, and my mom got me an Airbnb to kind of stay for a while. And this Airbnb was in the mountains of Santa Cruz, and it was called the Be and Be Well. And the people who hosted this B&B were all about wellness, mental and physical wellness. So they had a sensory deprivation tank. Had saunas, jacuzzis. We would do yoga and meditate together. And yeah, their names were Jay and Shanti, this lovely couple that were a big part of Burning Man culture. My first kind of taste of Burning Man culture were these two. They would camp with sacred spaces. And, you know, they were the first people, I'll never forget this, to ask me what my intention was. We were talking one day and they're just like, so what's your intention? And I'm looking at them like, what do you mean? I'm going to college and going to get a job and I'll, you know, be in debt, but I'll have a wife and 2.5 kids. And they were like, yeah, but why? What's your intention with that? And that kind of was the first domino to kind of set off this idea of, okay, it's time to unpack and figure out why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And kind of shift from this way of reacting into a way of responding.
Yeah, that's a beautiful lesson.
Mm-hmm.
That one can take a little bit for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, being with them was amazing. After my couple day stay there, they invited me back just to help out around the house. So I'd go up, you know, pull weeds for them, work in their garden, take a sensory deprivation float, and, you know, cook meals and hang out and just work on being vulnerable and letting my walls down.
So much healing, and probably the area you were in, like surrounded by all the mountains and everything, was probably very healing.
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially an escape from college life where, you know, it's all about books and then parties and everybody's figuring their things out. And to go to this stable space that just kind of held me in this cocoon of trees out in the mountains in Ben Lomond, it was yeah, it was exactly what I needed. And it changed the way that I saw the world and I wanted to act in the world. You know, being with them, I started getting inspired, starting to find out what my intention was. And, you know, it was a little misplaced, but this intention of wanting to create change in the world, which I still do. But looking back on it, the change that I really wanted to create was the change within myself.
Yes.
So the way that manifested was I ended up joining forces with some students. We started a group called Autonomous Students, and we got political and we started protesting. During this time at UC Santa Cruz, they emplaced a new UC president of the UC system. And the person they put in was Janet Napolitano, who before working there was actually the president of ICE for the federal government. What? Yeah, dude. And like now she's, you know, she was responsible for all these deportations, for separating families, for creating all of this fear in so many different communities. And now she is in charge of the UC system, where we have a bunch of Dreamer students, meaning that they are undocumented students. So we decided to create Autonomous Students, which was kind of inspired by Students for a Democratic Society back in the late 60s, which was the largest political student faction in history here in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah. And we protested. We shut down campus with the help of 500 students and two local unions, and shut down campus for 2 days.
Hell yeah.
The issue is, you know, we showed up on the first day to protest at 6 a.m. And when we got there, what we saw was an armored vehicle and police in riot gear before we had even set up. And then came to find out that these police weren't even from Santa Cruz. They were UC Berkeley police that were driven down to make sure that people could go to classes.
Whoa.
Yeah. So we ended up getting arrested and they took us down, booked us, spent a couple hours at the jail while we're getting booked. I have a very cute mugshot, I'll say that.
I can't wait.
Yeah. And, you know, the court ended up pushing the case just to the school and said, hey, y'all deal with this. And
were they trying to make the case, like, I guess, bigger than what I would say a college issue? Were they trying to blow it up?
No, they weren't. That was the one thing they didn't want. They wanted to keep it quiet, make sure no one really heard about it, make sure that the students, you know, didn't get in too much trouble so they could go back to classes and be a good worker and get back in debt and have their wife and 2.5 children.
Yeah, let's get this over with as quickly as possible. I'll let them have their little riot, like their little, you know, and like they let's hush, hush and quiet them up. Ugh, God.
Exactly. So going back to classes, I actually got suspended. Everybody who got arrested got suspended. What they wanted from us was 40 hours. What?
For protesting.
For protesting, yes.
What?
At UC Santa Cruz, which is known as the rebel school of the UCs. And to go back to classes, they wanted us to do 40 hours of community service and a 5-page apology letter.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And as, you know, my former self probably would have been like, yes, I'm so sorry. I'm a good student. But after, you know, kind of meeting my mentors and realizing, you know, the question of what is my intention? Is my intention just to go back and be like, okay, I lost, like, or is my intention to actually understand community, actually understand human connection, and create a better world for everybody to live in?
Absolutely.
And, you know, it came to a point where I said, I'm going to follow that. I'm going to follow my intention. And I dropped out instead of doing that. And
did you still have to like do the was the community service court ordered? Like, did you have to go to court or what? So okay.
Wow. No, it was not court ordered. It was ordered by the school.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, washed my hands of it and said, you know what? The UC system, the higher education system kind of just showed me their true colors. And that doesn't align with me. You know, it aligns for a lot of people. Like higher education, I'm not here just to take a dump on higher education. It can be useful. I don't think it's useful when you're young and you have no idea what you want to do with your life or who you even are. Like, I could probably go back to school in maybe 5 years from now and actually figure something out, but it was not for me at that time. And that's when I decided, like I said, to drop out. I had made some money. This is Santa Cruz back in, you know, 2014. Certain things were illegal at that time, and I made some money doing it. It's weed. We're talking about weed. Okay. We can save my sex work stories for another time, but we're talking about weed. I sold a bunch of weed and, you know, saved up some money and decided to travel and really figure out who I am, figure out what community looks like outside of the United States.
Isn't it crazy how travel just sort of makes you have to figure that shit out pretty damn quick?
Mm-hmm. Where'd you go? Well, when I was living in Santa Cruz, we had one housemate who was around our age, wasn't going to school. He was just being a barista and he'd been saving up money and he wanted to travel. And I don't remember how we just said, yeah, Peru. But Peru is what we decided on. We wanted to go hike through the Andes Mountains. We wanted to see the jungle, you know? We wanted to go experience.
That's a cool spot to choose. I'm about to go to Peru in 2022 and I haven't been yet and it's been pushed off COVID related shit and it's like finally happening 2 years later and I'm very excited. So I want to know all about this trip, where to go, what to do, and of course, like, what the fuck happened.
Mm-hmm. So to make this more affordable, because we're just college kids, we saved up some money, but, you know, we're not going to go stay in fancy resorts and hotels. Like, we are rough in it.
You were like backpacking hostel vibes.
Yes, yes. Like, finding the cheapest hostel, like... Got to a point where if it was $15 a night, I'd be like, that is way too expensive. $15 US, like my bank account is hurting. So we did, you know, cheap hostels where, you know, the water would turn off at 6 p.m. So you had to, you know, make sure you had bottles and gallons of water just in case if you had to go to the bathroom at night, you could fill up the back of the toilet and make it flush. So you could wash your hands, brush your teeth. You had to shower before that time. And we also used an amazing website called Workaway that connects you with spaces like hostels and farms. It's kind of like wolfing, but not only organic farms. And for exchange of work, you get a place to stay and free food. So we ended up getting connected with this small community center that needed people to come and help build it up, do some construction work, work on their garden in this small, small town called Maras in the Sacred Valley of the Incas, just outside of Cusco, Peru.
Wow.
And that was our first stop. We were there for 2 weeks. We were the only English speakers, except for another person working there who was this old man from Spain, and he just kind of acted as our translator. We knew some Spanish, me more than my friend. He was a Montana boy. I grew up in San Diego. It was a beautiful community, you know, a farming community. You're walking through the streets and you're seeing 7-year-old kids walking their sheep through town. I'll never forget one night as the sun is going down, we're walking back to town and these two kids are just like, "Burro, ¿dónde está el burro?" And we're like, "What's going on?" And they're like, "We lost our donkey." And unsupervised, running around looking for this donkey. And yeah, we were just really brought in, and it was a beautiful place to be in this valley, surrounded by farms, and the valley itself surrounded by these giant glacial mountains that were just scratching the sky. Yeah, it was stunning. And we were there for about 2 weeks. And when our work was done,
2 weeks total or 2 weeks in just that spot? Oh,
2 weeks just in that spot.
shit.
And it was the perfect start. Our host was super friendly, took us all around to sacred ruins in the Sacred Valley of the Incas, and showed us down by the river. There's Ollantaytambo, which is a beautiful place to visit. And there's some small hippie communities down there as well, working with plant medicine and other stuff like that, which was foreshadowing for this whole journey.
Oh, I'm excited to hear. We're planning to do a 5-day ayahuasca journey. So I'm excited to hear what your journey was about.
Yeah, before we
Wait,
even got into that, we were just focusing on, backpacking. We
right.
backpacked through the mountains to a hot springs. I can't remember the name of the town, super small. And then we decided to actually backpack to Machu
Oh.
Picchu, but without a guide.
Why?
Because I'm a city kid and I had my lovely mountain boy to kind of lead the way.
So, were you planning to go to the top with no guide?
So what we had planned, we'd left Madras at this point, and we were now staying in Cusco, working at a hostel bar called Coco Pelly's, which I definitely suggest you check out if you're looking for a night to kind of go get a drink and meet some travelers. It's a party spot. It doesn't get too crazy, but when it does, the bar doesn't close until the last person leaves, and we were bartending there. And I always knew when the Australians would come in and order Jaeger bombs that we would be there until at least 9 a.m.
Oh, wow. I love this. And I wrote Coco Pelly down. I will look for it.
Yeah, so we were bartending there, which, note on that, neither of us were 21 at this point, never been in a bar, and now we're just bartending, And yeah, it was there where we kind of planned out our trip to Machu Picchu. And there's multiple different ways to get to Machu Picchu. You can take the Incan Trail, which you have to book months or even sometimes years in advance to get the permit and go with the guide and do the actual Incan Trail. You
Wow.
can do the jungle excursion, which we actually did that one first and went on this jungle excursion, which they would take you in these taxis up to the top of the mountains. You mountain biked down from the mountains into the jungle. And then you did some river rafting. And then you hiked from there to Aguas Calientes, which is the town just below Machu Picchu. And then you take a bus up and experience Machu Picchu.
That sounds badass.
Super fun and super magical. I will never forget river rafting. And our guide is like, "All right, everybody, try to stand up as we go through these like really easy rapids. Let's see who can stay standing." And we're all standing on the raft, and everybody falls except for me. And at that moment, the guy's like, "All right, everybody, start paddling." And I start to get down. And he's like, "No, you stay. You stay up there. Let's see how long you can stay." And our guide is a native to Peru. And that's when I realized that everybody on the boat is white except for me and the guide. So I
That's why
had this
you had
beautiful moment.
brother paddling and all those
Yeah, and they're all paddling, and I'm standing there, and I am just feeling my oats, and I'm just like, "Yes, reparations. Whoosh, whoosh, paddle, whiteys." Yeah.
How long did you last for?
I ended up falling once we got to the second rapids. They were a little tougher.
Yeah.
But it was so beautiful just seeing that transition from, the high mountains down to the jungle and then getting to Aguas Calientes. And so that was the first time we went there. And then the second time we were like, yo, let's just hike to Aguas Calientes. And I was ready for it. You know, we had our 45-liter backpacks, we had our camping gear, our stove, our water filtration, and we went down, printed out some maps, and decided to hike. The trail was the trail for Mount Salkantay, which is a beautiful mountain. You can also do it with a guide, but we decided to be like, we're cheap and have barely any money, so let's just hike it ourselves. And you know, there were some moments where like, wait, where is you know, the path? But luckily there's so many guides going through, and a lot of the locals use it as well. So you're just follow the donkey shit at the end of the day, and you'll get to where you need to go.
Okay, so it didn't go badly then. Like, I was at first, I was like, shit. Especially, I don't know why, but, and maybe this isn't a thing, but I feel like the altitude a little bit scares me. Like, what if you got like sick or something?
Oh, honey, that is what coca leaves are for.
So
The
you just
second we
chewing on it the whole time?
chewing them, yeah, mouthfuls. So when you first fly into Cusco, you know, the altitude is so high that a lot of people get sick. And a lot of the hostels and places you're going to stay are going to have coca tea for you.
Okay.
And that's great. But if you go to the local markets, you can get a pound of coca leaves for very cheap, with this stuff they call Yipta, which is this alkalizing agent that helps get the coca into your system quicker. It numbs your whole mouth, sometimes even your whole face. And
And not like cocaine, or yes, like cocaine. Like, how related is this? You like said your
pretty
mouth opens up,
similar, pretty
like
similar.
stuff.
Yeah, you know, I like to say it's the vegan cocaine.
Wow.
Which, side note, if there's any vegans listening and you're doing cocaine, you're not fully vegan.
Hey, buddy. Oh.
Yeah, that actually, it helps with the altitude. It helps get more oxygen into your blood. And we're chewing it the whole time while we're hiking. And on this Salkantay hiking trip, that is kind of the pinnacle of me realizing who I was and why it was so tough for me to find authentic connections with people. You know, by this point, it had been about 3.5 months in Cusco, with my travel partner working at this bar hostel, exploring around town, and we decided to do this backpacking trip together. You know, spending every day with someone, you get close. And then when you're in the wilderness with that person, you get even closer. And, you know, the feelings just start to grow. And for me, it reached this pinnacle on this mountain. And we set up camp. We had an amazing day of hiking. We were coming down. We'd just gotten over the pass, and we were coming down from the pass. We're seeing chinchillas, wild chinchillas hopping through the rocks. You know, we ran into a wild alpaca. We saw the most amazing things these days. We saw the peak of Mount Salkantay, this glacial mountain, just covered in ice and snow, with these jagged rocks just crashing through them. And we set up our camp for the night, feeling super fulfilled. And, you know, have you seen the movie Brokeback Mountain?
You know, I fucking haven't, and I've been wanting to for so long. I know, because all my favorite actors are in it, and the story's fucking magical, and I still have not freaking seen it. It's probably
Crime.
like
Because,
a
honey, let me
four-hour
tell
movie.
you, I had my Brokeback Mountain moment. We were getting ready for bed, laying in our sleeping bags, and all I wanted to do was kiss my travel partner, and it terrified me. All my life, I'd been hiding from myself, lying to myself. And at this moment, lying in my sleeping bag, lights are off, no sound except for the wind rustling through the grass. And my mind is racing and my heart is pounding because there was nothing more true to me in that moment than the fact that I wanted to kiss my travel partner, that I wanted to connect not only on an emotional level, but on a physical level, and how that was just shattering every perception in my mind of who I was and who I was supposed to be. And I finally gathered the strength and told them and said, "Hey, can I kiss you goodnight?" And it was beautiful. And oh my gosh, the little Pisces moon in me, honey, creating all of these realities in my head of what the future was going to be and how we were going to travel on together for the rest of our lives. We were going to save up and buy a broken down bus and fix it up and grow psychedelic mushrooms in it and make macrame and learn to play music and travel around busking, going from town to town. And
I love it so much. I'm like gonna cry.
I know, it was great until we got back to Cusco.
Okay, fuck.
And I realize as he tells me that it was just an experiment and it wasn't for him and he wasn't into it. Oh, my heart shattered.
Oh my God.
And we were supposed to be traveling on to the south of Peru to Colca Canyon, which is Peru's Grand Canyon, this giant, amazing geological site to go experience. We're supposed to travel down there the next day. And I went up to him after finding out that it wasn't for him, he was only experimenting. And I went up to him and I said, "I'm not traveling on with you tomorrow. I'm gonna stay here and travel on by myself."
Wow.
And he looks me in the eyes and he tells me, "Whatever you need to do for you, I support you and I love you." Bitch, I broke down in tears and I ran away.
Oh my God.
I ran to my room. Everything in my head is just racing. I'm like, "No, you were supposed to fight for me. You were supposed to say, but I want you to come with me. You were supposed to cry, not just look at me lovingly and support me in my own journey. How dare you? I need this toxic relationship in my life right now." And so that kind of just led me to being a little passive aggressive. And the next morning, I had heard of a San Pedro ceremony happening from one of my friends. So yeah, I woke up gonna before just him.
Punish yourself by or go get crazy.
Exactly. I was like, "I'm going to go do this. I'm going to cry. I'm going to I'm going to feel like I'm dying and I'm going to learn so much and it's going to be so hard. I'm going to have a horrible trip, but it's going to be sacred. So I'll learn something from it."
I fully get it.
So I end up waking up before he does. And I'm like, "You know what? I'm not even going to say bye to you. I'm going to go because you're going to miss me. And it's going to make you cry. And then you're going to want me back." And I go on this trip. And of course, it's fucking winter solstice.
Okay.
Or summer solstice down there. Mm-hmm. So I go on this trip and I'm expecting to have this very difficult experience of realizing that I should have just continued traveling with him. I should have followed that path and stayed there and, forced myself to do it, even though it hurt. And I drink this San Pedro, which the active chemical in it is mescaline, this psychedelic experience. And I'm sitting in this cave overlooking the Sacred Valley of the Inca. And I'm just smiling from ear to ear. My body is warm. My heart is fulfilled. Tears are coming out of my eyes, dancing down my face as I'm watching these amazing clouds just flow right over with their shadows tagging along, covering large swaths of land. these beautiful farms and the potato flowers blooming in purples and yellows and whites. And the soil, just this rich red. And I'm just sitting there and I'm getting this message that I'm exactly where I need to be. And I'm happy. For the first time in my life, I am happy and I know where I am and I know who I am. And the message for me is that I'm doing exactly what I need to do and that it's okay that he wasn't into it and that it wasn't meant to be and that was fine and that they helped me take that first step into the unknown. And I got to keep pushing forward. And that this is my new path, to do the things that scare me, to walk forward into the unknown and to find out and to find joy in that. And yeah.
I can. It's so good. It's so good. It's so beautiful. It's what, like, just a magical way to. Obviously, like, everything before that is so hard and traumatic and the hiding and everything, but to come into yourself like that in that moment in that way is, that's just so unique.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but the magic doesn't stop there. Because you know how the universe works. The universe doesn't allow you to get away without closing a chapter.
That's right? So true. So Montana boy had to come back into your life somehow.
Well, I came back to the hostel after this amazing experience.
Okay. You know,
I'm floating. I'm light as a feather. I am filled with light. And I walk into the bar and, you know, the whole staff at the bar, we got really close. You know, we were going on adventures together. We were trauma bonding and, you know, experiencing all these cool things together. And I get there and I walk into the bar and I'm just like, ooh, it's a little sad in here. And my bar manager comes up to me and is like, you know, Ian left today. And I was like, yeah, I know. And he's like, and you weren't there. Uh-huh. I was like, I know. I had to go do me. And I'm happy for Ian. And I hope that their adventures are amazing, but it's just not time for us right now. And that's totally fine. Maybe I'll run into them. You know, I was using that hippie cop out when you're not trying to deal with shit. And you're just like, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I stayed there for a couple more weeks and decided to leave South America and go to Panama by myself. So I bought my flight. And I decided to take the 24-hour bus ride. Yes, 24 hours from Cusco to Lima, because it's cheaper to fly out of Lima.
Oh, shit.
And I get to Lima. I have like 9 hours until my flight leaves. So I'm just hanging out in Lima, walking around with my giant ass backpack on my back. And I end up running into this person I knew from the bar in Cusco. And they're like, hey, did you know that the Cocapelli's in Cusco actually has a sister hostel here in Lima? Like, you should go drop your bag off there, have a drink, and hang out to your flight. There's some people that were staying at the Cusco one that you know. And I was like, oh, you know? And they told me who it was. I was really excited and hadn't seen them in like a month. So I go there and I walk into the bar. As I turn the corner, who's sitting at the bar? It's fucking Ian.
Of course.
My jaw drops and he looks and his jaw drops and he's just like, you know, speechless. And so am I. And I go over and I'm like, Ian, aren't you supposed to be in like Colca Canyon right now down south? Weren't you gonna like go to Bolivia and like do other things down there? Like, why are you in central Peru on the coast?
Yeah.
And he looks at me wide-eyed and he says, I fell asleep on my bus this morning, missed my stop.
Stop it.
And woke up in Lima. What? So I decided to come to the CocoPellis here and work here for a couple weeks before I go down south.
Freaking universe.
Yeah. So we end up catching up at this bar, shared a drink, and it was finally time for us to kind of close the chapter. And when it was time for me to catch my flight, we said our goodbyes, and he got teary-eyed. And I was standing there completely content in myself and happy, you know? And we hugged and we said goodbye. And I went to Panama.
Oh my God, that story is so good. That
Yeah.
someone needs to write a fucking movie about it. Maybe I will someday. We'll see. Wow. Okay, so what happened in Panama? Or was it just like kind of a stop, like nothing compared to that?
Panama was cute. I just kind of went around for a bit, worked at a farm, and then made my way to Costa Rica, where I ended up meeting this crew of people who were super amazing. We were on the Caribbean side at Puerto Viejo, beautiful place. And they were all going to a music festival.
Yes. Is
And I
this
was like,
where
that sounds
the
fun, a
performance?
music festival.
Is that where, like, or were you already performing at this time, or is that where this performance side of, like,
I was not performing. I
okay.
was 20 in Central America, still trying to figure out who I am. Had this big epiphany, and all of these people are like, hey, you should just come to this music festival with us. Like, you should just try to get in. We might be able to get you a ticket in. And I was like, okay. Still being a cheapo because I was like, I'm not buying a ticket to a music festival, but I'll try to get in for free. And if I don't, hey, I'm in Costa Rica still. Fuck it. I'll just travel on. So on our way over there, I end up connecting with one girl the deepest. Her name was Regan. And, I'm sharing my story about just coming out and trying to figure myself out. And she's just really appreciative of my vulnerability. She's telling me her life story, and we're just really hitting it off. So we get to the festival, and everybody goes in. The one girl that said that she could get me in kind of disappears, and I'm sitting there for like an hour and a half just outside the festival, hoping she comes back, not being too much of a wook. I wasn't standing out there being like, looking for one ticket, blessing for one, please. So I'm just sitting there because I'm still just having faith that she's going to come out, but she never does. And then I see this girl, Regan, come back out and she's got this sign and she's telling people to recycle. And she sees me and she comes up. She's like, yo, did you get in? What's going on? And I said, no, I didn't get in. I'm just, chilling here, hoping that she comes back. And Regan goes, actually, my boss is looking for more volunteers. Do you want to work trash and get into the festival? So I said, yes. I jumped in. We did waste management for the festival, met so many amazing people. But by the end of the festival, my phone and wallet were missing.
Oh God.
Yeah. So now I'm stuck in Costa Rica with no way to pull out funds and no way to contact anyone.
Okay, that's the fun part.
Yeah. And Regan's like, yo. Listen, use my phone, connect to Wi-Fi, contact who you need to contact, and I'll help you get to Western Union. And I'm just so grateful at this point. Contact my family, get them to send some funds from my account through to Western Union so I can go. Luckily, I still have my passport. And on our way to Western Union after the festival, Regan's wallet gets stolen.
God, shit.
Yeah, so now we're both stuck with no money, except for I have money coming through Western Union. And I look at her and she looks at me, and we'd already like I said, we made this amazing connection that was really solidified at a secret set by desert dwellers. I came back to the tent because she was crashing in my tent. She's eating peanut butter and apples, and I'm ready to go to bed. And she's like, hey, the desert dwellers are doing a secret set. Do you want to come dance? And I was like, fuck yeah, I love the desert dwellers. So we go and we get down and we kind of both do the spin move and we catch each other's eye and we're like, whoa, you dance like a fucking weirdo. And that was our connection.
Yes.
So at this point we have, you know, no money. We're going to a Western Union. And I was like, listen, I'm not done traveling. If you're not done either, we still have your phone. We can contact our families and just Western Union together and see how far we go. So we ended up doing that for about 3 months, going from Costa Rica to Guatemala.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it was magical, filled with, you know, waterfalls and swimming in lakes and rivers and hiking up mountains and all of that. And, you know, she just really became one of my closest friends. And I actually live with her now here in LA.
God, that's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, it really felt like she was kind of placed in my life as a reminder to continue to wander, continue to adventure, continue to grow and learn. Because when we got back to the States, we worked lightning in a bottle together through the trash crew that we met at Envision. And she said that she was going to Eugene, Oregon. And my whole plan was to go back to school. Because I had this idea that, like, I figured out who I am now. I can go back to school. I'll just bite the pillow and do the community service, do the apology letter. And I get to Santa Cruz with her and she's looking for a ride up to Eugene, Oregon. And I was like, yo, I'm not really done traveling just yet. You know, I still got 3 weeks before classes start. Like, let's fucking go. I'll drive you up to Oregon. So I drive her up to Oregon. You know, she takes me to the farmer's market, which is just bustling with people, live musicians, just the most vibrant organic produce I've ever seen. And she takes me to some local restaurants. She takes me to a gas station, which was actually a highlight. Like this gas station called Sequential Gas Station in Oregon, in Eugene, Oregon, that has a living roof covered in grass. You walk inside, they have kombucha on tap, vegan snacks. There's not a single Dorito or Cheeto to be found, honey. It is all, you know, like Nancy's produce and stuff like that. And I was like, Eugene is amazing. We floated down the river. We went to hot springs. And I was just like, this is where I need to be. Like,
that sounds so fun.
Yeah, I was like, I have an idea of who I am now. Like I'm ready to start putting roots down. And I'm afraid if I go back to school at Santa Cruz, all of the work that I've done is going to go to waste. It's going to just be a crazy travel story that, you know, I just went and did a year abroad rather than this is who I am.
Yeah.
So to the dismay of my mother, but excitement of my grandfather, I dropped out of school and moved up to Eugene, where she had a room. Her roommate was looking for somebody to sublease for a couple months. Bitch, we're talking $300 a month for my own room in a house. And we had trim work delivered to our house at $200 a pound.
Amazing. Wow.
So it was the perfect place to set roots down and start living my new life. And that is when I got to go to my first gay bar, see my first drag show. And her and my other housemate put me in drag for my first time.
Amazing.
And sent me on my way.
Holy shit. So when was Fierce Facetia Farce born?
Facetia Farce was born in the end of 2015
okay.
in Eugene, Oregon. And I just kind of took over, you know?
Wow.
That first year was real crunchy. You know, she was still learning her makeup, still learning all that. But after that, I ended up finding my own drag family called the Farce Family, which was a collective of alternative queer performance artists. I was the only drag queen. We had, you know, a drag king, some drag things, which is this idea of just like gender fuck drag. We started producing our own shows in Eugene, Oregon called Club Couture. And yeah, started holding space for queerdos to kind of come out and be who they are.
Amazing. So what would you say the future for you guys would be? Like the future for, I guess I want to say like you and your roommate, you and Fasisha, you and what you're building. That's what I want to know.
I would say the what the future has for me and myself, me and Duncan, is a continuation of the adventure, a continuation of the curiosity, of the growth, of the jumping into the abyss and spreading my wings and hoping I fly. Me and my housemate, we're lifelong family now. Me and Regan, after everything we've been through, that's something that will never go away, whether we live together or, separated by an ocean. We will always, always be family. Me and Facetia, we are exploring new ways to do drag, not just at the clubs. I am now hosting private events for companies online, and I am looking for ways to expand that to do private parties. So if anybody is listening and you're like, wow, I would love to have a drag queen at my private party, or I would love to have a drag queen host my party, or bring in a bunch of queer clowns, that's me. Feel free to hit me up on my Instagram or my email, and we can work that out.
I know someone who exactly would want that at her birthday, so I will pass that info along.
Yes, please. And as for festivals, I am now building my way into creating my own production company, the Farce Productions. And I'm hoping by either 2023 or 2024 to have my first full immersive space build and programming at a music festival.
Wow, congrats. That's big.
I'm excited, not having a degree, festival scenes has helped me so much in just allowing me to learn new trades and not judging me based off of a piece of paper and how much debt I have, and really just seeing the work ethic that I have and the art that I have to bring. And I've been immensely grateful for that.
Beautiful. And for somebody who is still finding themselves coming out and learning who they are and facing and untangling all the cords of the past, maybe they are learning all these different sides of themselves. What kind of advice would you pass along to anybody listening who is going through those types of struggles?
I would say take a breath, take it step by step, and be patient and kind with yourself. Unloading and undoing the knots of trauma is a lot of work. Therapy is great, and also, psychedelics. If used responsibly, if you understand the importance of set and setting, and doing it with a good community can really help. But at the end of the day, it's not the psychedelics, it's not the therapy, it's up to you to take that first step. And it's going to be terrifying. It's going to be some of the scariest shit in your life, but it will open up so many new doors for you to experience life in ways that you never thought possible. At least it did for me. And, I hope that will for someone else. But it's all up to you in the way that you do it. So at the end of the day, all I can say that will be a blanket statement for everyone is be patient and be kind with yourself. Take a breath and connect.
I love that so much. And for those listening who want to help the trans community, what would you say is the best way for them to do that?
The best way to help the trans community, I would say, is find local nonprofits in your area. It's easy to find the big ones and give them money, which they're doing great work, but sometimes it's the smaller ones that are doing some of the most important work. Like we talked about at the beginning, Transponder is a local trans-found and led nonprofit in Eugene, Oregon. If you would like to donate to them or support them in any way, you can find them at transponder.community. And yeah, just support them. And in your everyday life, hey, learn about pronouns. It's super easy. Don't shame yourself. Like I said, it's another one of those things where you're going to mess up, and that's okay. Just be committed to learning and, ask the questions if you don't know.
Yeah,
It's totally fine.
I love that. I have two more questions. One is if my listeners want more you, more they, more them, all of it, how can they find Duncan and Fasisha?
Well, you can find me. I am most active on my Instagram at facetia underscore farce.
You might need to spell it out for them, though.
Facetia spelt FACISHA underscore farce, FARCE. If you would like to collaborate or book me for a private event, or hey, if you want me to produce a drag show at your private event, you can email me at facetia, FACISHA dot farce. Oh, wait, sorry. No, that's so wrong. If you want to email me, you can email me at booking, BOOKING dot facetia, FACISHA at gmail.com. Reach out to me there or just DM me on my Instagram and we can make some stuff work.
Love it. Last question. What are your magical superpowers?
Ooh, my magical superpowers, honey, I would say controlling an audience. It is truly a magical superpower that only lately I've been really realizing how powerful it is. At Halloween this year, I said one thing, and the next thing I know, I had the whole audience screaming shame at some guy while he was licking my boot on stage. Exactly. I try to be nice with the power that I have on stage while I'm holding a mic. But this was totally consensual and it felt really good. So yeah, if you need somebody to control an audience, honey, that is my magical superpower.
Perfect. Couldn't have asked for anything better. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Your story was like, my heart feels very full right now, and like I was on the edge of my seat in a way, just really fully engaged. So thank you for sharing and being vulnerable and showing up, and like I just really appreciate it.
Of course, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you for having me. And thank you, listeners, for making it all the way out here to the end of this beautiful podcast.